Hello and welcome to Not a Safe Space. This is Sabrina.
And Tabby.
Hey girl, what's going on?
Not much. How are you?
Good. Episode 28.
Yes. I was just I wanted to say episode 27, but I was going, no, that's the one I just released this morning.
I never say it, so I was trying to get it in there fast.
Why are you trying to steal my sunshine?
I know. I don't know.
Dude.
I don't know.
Dude.
Honestly, I don't want that pressure, so I take it back. We're starting all over.
Oh, great. So okay. It's episode 28, guys.
Hi, and welcome. So, what's going on?
Not much. I got up at 5 o'clock this morning.
Ew, why?
5 a.m. So, you know, we're doing this exercise thing, and we're trying to get healthy, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I hate working out in front of a TV. I hate it. Mm-hmm. It's the worst thing ever for me. And then Dion and I were talking about it. He goes, we live on a fucking farm. There's so much work that could be getting done, and we could be getting our exercise done at the exact same time. So there's no reason for us not to get up early, work an hour, hour and a half outside in the yard, you know, as the sun is coming up, and then go in and do our regular stuff and then do it after dinner as well. And there's our fucking exercise.
Yeah, 100%.
And we're getting shit done and accomplished.
Right, right. So what kind of work did you guys have to do?
So, you know, the front bed where the fountain is, how it's a complete mess. So we're digging that completely out. And we bought some seeds that we're going to plant because we watched this documentary called The Biggest Little Farm.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really interesting. It all talks about soil and diversity and running a farm as an ecosystem. So planting lots of different crops and planting cover crops and planting, making sure that you have your cows and your chickens and your pigs and your ducks and your sheep, and they all interact with each other. I mean, they don't kill anything. So like they had a snail problem on the trees of their fruit. On the fruit trees. Well, they would take them off the trunks, but they'd be back up there the next morning going, well, what the fuck am I supposed to do? Then they realized, well, ducks eat snails.
Okay.
So they let the ducks out. The ducks ate the snails, and now they don't have to buy the food for the ducks. So it all feeds each other.
So, and you're talking about the plants doing the same thing. So, like, when you said cover crops, are you talking about ground cover or shade cover?
Ground cover. So stuff like, nobody's going to know what I'm talking about, but cowpeas, hairy vet, winter rye, different varieties of grass and flowers, and the different variety puts the nitrogen back into your soil. So as you know, in Florida, we have a lot of sand.
Right.
And it's really hard to grow stuff. So you got to put nitrogen and get your soil back and healthy so that way you can keep growing the crops. So I'm going to do this eventually out in the pasture, and it's going to create food for the cows. So I don't have to go out to the damn store and buy their grain or their hay during the winter months.
Yeah, cool. And so then are you guys going to add, because we've been looking into like there's plants that will keep like mosquitoes away, like lemongrass and all that stuff. So then you can plant that around like your pool area and your picnic area and things that we're not using chemicals then.
Right, exactly. Yes, that is going to be the other part of it to help keep away the mosquitoes and the flies.
Right.
You know, but and that also comes from, believe it or not, chickens.
Yeah.
Chickens take care of the fly population as well.
Do you remember the fly traps?
Oh my gosh.
So Tabby had, individually over at my house, I had a fly problem. One weekend, we had a huge party, and my son and husband are terrible at leaving, forgetting trash day. You know, it's so hard to fucking remember. And so then on the side of our house, we started to have a fly problem, which meant in our backyard, on our patio, we started to have a fly problem, which also meant our new neighbors that had just moved in, who is a listener... her patio is on the other side of that fence. So one day she was out front and she was like, man, have you guys noticed the problem with all the flies? And we were like, ooh. Yeah, that might be our fault.
My bad.
And we had just been at your house, and you guys have, because you have farm animals and issues with flies, you guys have purchased on Amazon these big fly buckets.
Yes.
That become the most disgusting.
Oh my gosh, thing. And they're very tricky. So you get them and you set them up and you can see the flies going in and they get trapped because they're attracted to the smell because they stink, right? Mm-hmm. It's basically powdered cow shit is what they're using.
Right.
Well, a few flies get in and then you go back 2 days later and it's completely full. And you're thinking, wow, I got all these flies. But then you're like, I still have a fly problem. What's going on? Realize those fuckers don't die initially. They go in there and they fucking reproduce.
Yeah.
So they have all these eggs in there and then they hatch.
And then there's.
And then they die.
Yeah. Then there's dead flies in there.
Yes. And so it's gross.
It's literally like zombie flies. It's like it starts to smell. And it works, though.
It does. But there's something that works better than this.
Oh, well, our experience with that was that it worked, and they, like you said, they went in there, they don't die, but they get trapped in this bottle or this canister, and it's clear, so you can see this happening, but then they start having babies, and then there's dead corpses in there, but then there's live corpses in there, and it starts to smell really bad, and it's supposed to be reusable, but if you go to the Amazon review, it tells you, like, dig a hole and just bury the fucker because there's no other way around. It smells like death.
Pretty much because you've got the smell.
We gifted our neighbor one.
Oh, good. And it's even better than this. So they're called microscopic wasps.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do is they come in a mesh bag and they come in egg form and you put them outside and then they hatch, right? And you put them where the source of your flies are. Well, what happens is there are these itty-bitty-bitty wasps. They don't bother you. You won't even notice that they're there. And they go out and they go and eat all the fly larvae.
Okay, so you're bringing a bug in to then eat that bug.
Correct.
Okay.
And so it gets rid of the flies. You don't feel any repercussion of having these little wasps around because that sounds kind of weird. Like, why in the hell would I bring wasps into my environment? But no, these, and they do the trick.
Oh, okay. Well, another option in case, you know, this summer, my kid, which they always do, they always forget freaking trash day. And we end up with some type of strange fly problem eventually. Usually right. After like a seafood boil or something disgusting.
A seafood boil. You know, please invite me to one of those because we don't have them at my house.
We do need to do one. We should actually just do one maybe for like 4th of July. And because it's so easy. Yes. Everybody just bring one ingredient and then we'll boil it. We have the seafood pots.
Right. Oh, well, we've got that big steamer.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. See, we did one at your house before, didn't we?
No, we do what's called a country boil. It's got the cabbage and the potato and the sausage and carrots and all that stuff, and everybody loves that except for me because I don't eat cabbage, I don't eat sausage, I don't eat the carrots, I only eat the corn and the potatoes, and I feel unsatisfied afterwards.
Yeah, that's kind of like an almost like a northern seafood boil, that sounds like,
right.
Or somehow like a midwestern. Yes. Putting cabbage and corn,
well,
in there, it's kind of gross.
Pam and Dion are from Ohio.
Oh, yeah, that's true. The only two people I like from Ohio, well, besides my BFF, everybody else, I think, it sucks from Ohio. Oh, I guess I have family from there, too. You're exempt.
Okay, we're exempt. Okay, that's nice. I was going to say, what the fuck?
So you had your dog parade this weekend,
yes.
And then I have some dog stories for you as well. Why don't you go first and tell us about the dog parade? Did you walk in the parade, or do you bring your dog to the parade?
So you can do both. I did not walk in it this year. I did last year. And this year what I was a corner captain. Mm-hmm. So I got a cute bright little vest and I got to walk up and down the street and tell people to get back on the streets and just I got to be a dictator and it was kind of fun. You know.
Wait, you got a safety vest.
Yeah, a bright yellow vest.
You said this cute little yellow vest. Yeah. You got a safety vest, look, like a crosswalking vest.
I am going to say it is a cute little vest to make myself feel better about the fact.
Yeah, but you're right, because it comes with power then, does. Right? Where you're like, get back on the curb, ma'am.
Right.
Back on the curb.
I literally had to tell somebody, I'm like, hey, you got to move back or whatever. And the lady next to her goes, am I okay? Like where I am? And I'm like, yeah, you're fine. You're good. And people are like, can I cross? And I'm like, no, you have to stay here until it's done. And then some people I'm like, just go ahead. And then when, because they throw beads and candy off the floats. So if they didn't make it, I had to go in the street and pick it up and put it back. But I don't think I'm going to do it again next year, believe it or not. I ended up, because the parade runs about an hour and a half long, which is a long parade, and you have to stand there, and my feet ended up hurting, which fucked up my knees, and then fucked up my back, and I went, yeah, we're not doing this, because you don't move a lot, believe it or not.
Yeah, so how would you like to participate next year? Do you think you'd rather walk in the parade, or?
Well, we all have to participate as far as building the floats and tearing down afterwards, so that part's fine. But probably I would walk in it again.
Mm-hmm.
Or, and if not, I would just actually go and enjoy it.
Okay. Now, the reason it's called the dog parade, are there dogs dressed up in it, or dogs are the, spectators?
Both. So everybody brings their dog to the dog parade, and then there are dogs in the parade. And so a lot of the vendors and sponsors are dog related. For example, the Humane Society, we have the local vets come out for it. Service dogs are out there. Weimer Dog Club. Everybody comes out. And this is all put on by the crew of Amelie, which you went to the ball for. So it's the exact same organization. So the theme of the parade is the exact same theme as the ball. So like this year it was Crew Will Rock You, all about music. This year, it was all about music. So people had their dogs dressed up anywhere from rainbow mohawks to punker rock outfits to from the 60s, leather outfit. It was just so cute and how, I mean, far out they went. And then, of course, you have all the floats, which have different people on it, you know, the royalty, the king and the queen on different floats, and those are always spectacular. We had one float that was two stories high, so you had people up really high and waving and all that fun stuff. And then the floats were in different themes, so like the past queens were on a grease boat and they were all the pink ladies.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, so it's so fun, and it's really cute. The entire town shuts down for the day for this event. The streets are packed. My aunt came in for it as well from Orlando, and she just had such a blast. So much fun. She's coming next year and bringing her sister.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
That's great. And you guys had good weather for it?
Yep. It was a little chilly in the morning, but then it cleared up, and it was, like you said, it was just a great day.
Okay. That sounds wonderful. And that's the last event then?
Yes. That's the last event until the season starts again.
Sweet.
Yeah.
So we have a kind of somber story here on in Dog World at the House on the Creek. You know, I have, obviously I have Link, who is my lover boy, and I don't want to say his name because he's still pounding on the front on my door. Which, by the way, I just posted a picture to guilt you in.
Guilt me
into him that I have to lock him out of these episodes.
Right.
Because I posted a sad picture of him on Instagram and said that you won't allow him to be part of this podcast anymore.
Oh.
Because this is emotionally abusing for him.
Well,
I have to
see it because I don't go on Instagram.
I know. So everybody knows I have, you know, Link, who is our lover boy. But then we also have Harley, who is a 17-year-old Lhasa Apso. I have owned him for 17 years. He was my dog with my first marriage. And Ethan was a baby when we got Harley. Never been my favorite dog. quite honestly, I've joked with my ex-husband's ex-wife that, you know, she stole my husband and our boat. Couldn't she take the dog? Right. You know, why did I get stuck
with the fluffy dog? Why did you get stuck with the fluffy dog?
Right. Whenever anybody says they want a dog, I'm trying to offer him as a free gift.
I know.
Yeah, he's just like whatever. Not my favorite. He pees everywhere. He poops everywhere.
He gets fun with it.
Yeah, he used to bite the crap out of us. There used to be this thing about him going into a cage and trying to get him out, and you couldn't get him out. He did survive a fire, though, one time. My house caught on fire, and he was home, and Randy came in and saved his life. So maybe that's what traumatized him and made him into a little asshole the last, that would have been 15 years ago. So over the last 2 weeks, he's had this really bad cough. Like he started coughing at night off and on, and he sleeps a lot, which of course, I mean, he's 17, but everybody kind of jokes like, oh, he's still alive. Because sometimes you look at him, you're like, this dog has got to die at some point. But then he gets a haircut and he's bouncing around like he's a puppy again. And people mm-hmm. will walk in, like our friend Dion from down the street or the neighbor, like, what the hell? Is this a new dog? Why is he so excited? Look at Harley. Like, he's got another 10 years on him. Well, the cough had gotten so bad over the last 3 days that I started to feel bad for him. Aww. And you know when I start to feel bad that we're worried. So we take him to the vet Friday night, or Nate takes him to the vet Friday night. And he calls me in the car and says that the dog has congestive heart failure and the vet could barely hear his heart beating, and that they said that they could do an x-ray and a few other things and maybe give him this breathing treatment, because now there's a bunch of fluid around his lungs,
right.
And which is why he was getting this gaspy coughing thing at night. But the vet, you know, just said, and also said that, you know, like his gums had discolored, which is a sign of congestive heart failure. So now I'm Googling the stages, because I'm like, well, what do we do? It's like $800 to do this procedure, or we put the dog down. And I'm like, well, if the dog is suffering, and we've Googled congestive heart failure, and it has explained that these are the final stages of it, right? He's lived 17 years.
Right.
And if he's in pain or uncomfortable, then we should put him down. But then I'm like telling Nate, I'm like, $800 is nothing. If, you know, if this is going to save his life for another 6 months to a year, then I don't mind doing it, whatever.
Right.
You know, but what does the doctor want to do? And he's like, I don't know. The doctor wouldn't say either way. So now we have a decision to make. And I was like, just do whatever you want to do. It's fine. I'm going to support you no matter what. I don't mind spending the money, but it's up to you. But also probably call Ethan. Ethan was in Orlando at your alma mater, UCF, this weekend.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, UCF. And so he calls Ethan, and Ethan kind of says the same thing. Like, all right, if he's in pain, we can put him down. So the doctor comes back and says, you know, Nate's like, well, you know, I guess we're just going to go ahead and put him down. We don't want him to be in pain. And then the doctor's like, well, I think we should probably at least try. Like, it's not that serious. And we're like,
huh?
Well, that's not the way you left the conversations before we left the room.
Right.
So now Nate's like, okay. So he messages me, like, I'm preparing that we're putting this dog down. I'm now crying in my car.
Oh.
Like, sad for my husband that he's there by himself. Sad that Ethan is by himself, supposing, you know, he's supposed to have a good weekend. Lorelai's walked out of the car to have a cry on her own. And I'm shedding tears for this dog I don't even
like.
So then Nate says, no, we're doing the procedure. We're going to do it. And we'll see how it goes. If it's not better by Wednesday, then we'll make a decision as a family and we'll do it all as a family. Okay, fine. That fucker has been fine all weekend.
I bet he has. And you know what? I think the doctor set you up so you would eventually end up making the payment. So they made $800 on a small little breathing treatment that solved all the problems.
So it was, he did the x-rays and of course saw the fluid. I can now feel his heartbeat, because I think I've joked around at some points we've walked past this dog on the ground and looked, and I'm like, I don't know if that fucker is breathing or not. Where now I can feel his heart beating again. He still has congestive heart failure, and he's still going to die at some point, but he was always going to die at some point. He's on this medicine that he'll probably need to be on for the rest of his life, which, again, I don't mind, whatever. But since he's been on the medicine, it has relieved all this fluid. Now he's on water pills, which means he's pissing all over the house even more. And because he has congestive heart failure, we just have to be fucking okay with it.
Right. You need a whole bunch of pee-pee pads around your house.
Everywhere, right? I'm carrying him everywhere because he's not supposed to have a lot of exercise or movement because of his heart.
That dog doesn't move much anyways.
Right, but I think he's going to be okay. So now I'm making fun of Nate. And I'm like, you fucker almost pulled the plug. Oh, God forbid.
That's so fucking wrong, Sabrina. You set the man up. He's taking care of this for you. And then you're making fun of him for making the choice that you told him to make. Dude, so that's fucking wrong.
I know. It wasn't until like late last night. So now it's 2 days of a healthy dog that I looked at him and I was like, and hey, by the way, you almost pulled the fucking plug. You almost killed this healthy dog. And God forbid I ever get pneumonia. I'm not letting you make that choice.
Oh, good Lord.
So now we're all having a good laugh over it. God knows what's really going to happen, but it was scary to have to go through that.
Right.
But as of today, Harley's still doing fine.
Good. Good to know. He's still here to drive you crazy even more now.
Yeah, absolutely. Which Nate did step in his pee and got peed on by the dog over the weekend. So good for him.
Yeah, I saw the video where he was running around the house with Lorelai and slipped and fell.
That was so funny.
Oh, poor guy.
So that's the other thing I wanted to talk about. So, you know, as we've mentioned a few times that, you know, my life is kind of in transition. I have this high school graduate that is in, he's going to school here, but he will be leaving eventually to go away. So I now have these moments of time where he's not here. My buddy, my Ethan, isn't here. And so he left for the weekend. And now I've explained to you guys that it's always Ethan and I against Lorelai and Nate, or vice versa.
Right.
All of it. The only reason is we're similar. Our personalities, our humor, everything is similar. If somebody's going to fall, get hurt, be dramatic, it's going to be Nate and Lorelai. Ethan and I are always trying to bust their balls and give them a hard time. We're the funny ones that go in. Like, Nate was upset the other day, and I was like, come on, Ethan, let's do what we do. And I was like, we're going to have to be idiots. And we walked in there and just started saying stupid stuff to make him laugh. Like, that's, we partner up. But now I find myself by myself.
Right.
With these two people that are weird, and they wrestle with each other, and they do this weird, and that's what I was, when that, all that happened, that video posted, I was in my room thinking, oh my God, what are these two doing? Because they'd been chasing each other around the house before Nate eventually Scooby-Dooed it and slipped and fell. Right. And that's when they came in and showed me the video. But it's always been like Ethan and I against Nate, right? Like the first 9 years.
Right.
And now, then it was 2-2. And now it's 2-1, but the opposite, where
you're ganged up against.
Right.
What are you going to do?
I don't know. Ignore. I don't know.
No. You're going to have to convert Lorelai.
Oh, God. Could you imagine? That would break Nate's heart.
Aww.
But, yeah, I don't know. It's weird. It's just different. Because it really is two against one. They are so similar in the things that they do and how picky they are about the way, like, both of them will not wear certain socks because they can feel it inside their feet. Where Ethan and I are like, whatever, I don't know.
You feel what inside your feet?
They swear that they can feel the seams. If it's not lined up on their toes, or Lorelai says if a pair of socks has a pattern, she can feel the pattern on her feet. and it will bother her and she won't wear them.
Really?
Which Nate is the same kind of person. Like if there is a tag within something, he's going to be like, I can't wear it. The tag is bothering. Can you cut it out? Can you cut it out? It's killing me. Can you cut it out?
Oh my gosh.
Where I'll walk around and I'll be like, shit, I didn't even notice. I still have the store tag on my jacket all day.
Right. We're like, why didn't you help me with that?
Right. So it's just different where now it's those two weirdos against me and I miss Ethan. But the good thing is Ethan also missed us. He texted us all weekend.
Oh.
When he was supposed to be at this college campus having this great big time.
What was he doing at UCF?
He has a friend that goes to UCF.
Okay.
So I guess they just hung out in the dorms and played basketball all weekend. They didn't actually go out, which he was looking forward to doing. So he was a little disappointed. But I'm glad that he's going to these college campuses. Like he spent a weekend at Gators, UF.
UF, yep.
Yeah, and had a lot of fun. They actually went out and all that stuff where, because I want him to look forward to doing that, like go. But then I'm also like, don't leave mama.
Don't leave me.
Don't leave me with these weirdos.
I can't lose my baby.
Right. So, and then it's also on me to, you know, bond with Lorelai, right? Because Ethan does take a lot of time and Ethan does, because we're similar, we tend to bond together and be drawn to one another where now I have to realize like you need to spend more time with your daughter mm-hmm. and you need to do more things one-on-one with her. And even though I think some of the stuff like all these TikTok videos and this and that is weird, I have to allow myself to be a part of her life and not push her to be a part of my life.
Right. Absolutely.
Very difficult.
Yes, but you also have to be there more for her, especially as she starts reaching puberty, because she's going to start right. going through shit that, unfortunately, Nate can't help her with.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I think also what scares me is it doesn't matter if we have this great, you know, family and I am very proud of our family and the way we all communicate together. But we have certain friends or ex-friends that don't have good relationships with their moms that it completely fucks you up.
Right.
And I don't want that to happen. I don't ever want her to think that she wasn't good enough for me or too weird or anything like that. So I have to be more self-aware of my relationship with her.
Right. Exactly.
And how important it is to her own development. Like you said, for the stages coming up.
Right. And they're not going to be easy stages either. Even if you have the best relationship, it's going to be tense and hard. And, you know, it's just, you remember puberty.
Yeah, for sure.
Mom was always wrong. You hate me. Like, I mean, at least that was how I was. I was always angry at my mom. For no reason.
Yeah, I guess I don't remember that so much for myself as I remember watching the relationship between one of our childhood friends and her mom. Mm-hmm. Because I lived with my father, who was very dominant. Even though I had my stepmom there, my dad kind of just reigned and did everything he told us to do, right? He was involved in buying our first training bras, buying our first maxi pads.
Right. Okay.
So he was involved in all of that stuff. But I can remember my friend coming to the bus stop and her mother would slap the shit out of her all the time because as she was becoming a teenager, she started to roll her eyes a lot and talk back a lot. And it was coming to her mother. And I remember her mom would just slap the shit out of her. Just slap her right across the face and she'd come to the bus stop crying. And it was during those like 13, 14 year old years.
Right.
So that's what you're referring to,
yes,
right?
Yes, that's what I'm referring to. The sassiness, the testing the boundaries, you know?
Right.
Not quite a kid, not quite a teenager, adult kind of thing. And women and girls have it worse than boys. I can't say that, but because of the hormone surges the girls go through.
I would think that you're right about that, that girls go through puberty worse than boys. Ethan was easy, right? Because it's more just funkiness. Like, ooh, you're funky. You're trying to get BO.
Right.
That kind of thing. Your voice changes. That's a joke. You know, you don't see the changes on a boy. Like, say if boys start to get pubic hair, you don't see that as much as a girl developing breasts.
Exactly.
So I think puberty for a boy is easier.
Right. Yeah. And it's hard for a girl because her body is changing it completely in a different way, especially when she starts to get her cycle and then the breasts. Right. And she also has her own pubes coming in, her own BO that she has to deal with. And there's this new surge of hormones that she's not equipped to deal with. So she loses her fucking mind.
Right.
I mean, that shit's crazy. Estrogen, it's a little fucking white dragon. You got to learn how to tame that beast.
Right. I agree with that. And Lorelai told me the other day, she was like, she's looking at her phone. My number one search on my Pinterest is outfits for preteens. And I was like, you're 9.
Right.
When you're not a preteen. And she was like, well, I'm about to be. And so then I was like, okay, Google. Oh, shit. I knew Google was going to be. You know, what's the age for preteen? And it said 10 to 12. So I was like, oh, you're right. Like, you are literally about to be a preteen. So now all these things, like, I need to stop treating her like a little girl into a girl that is going to start going through all this stuff.
Exactly.
And she needs mama more than dad.
Even if she doesn't want mama.
Say that again. Sorry, Google interrupted me.
I said, even if she doesn't want mama, that's going to be the that's the hard part.
Right. So, one more update. Dead bodies on the north side.
Oh, yes. What happened?
They found grave markers.
Well, that's kind of depressing.
Yeah, but it's...
it's not a murder.
No, it's not a murder. They were grave markers to Black Civil War soldiers.
Oh, wow. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, apparently the north side was referred to Polytown during the Civil War. There was a large migration of African Americans onto the north side, and that was a Civil War burial site, which then it goes into... Well, first of all... Why was that land ever developed and sold privately? And there are U.S. soldiers under there that now their grave sites have been disturbed. So
disrespected. I mean, that's ridiculous. If you were a soldier in the United States, where's the respect to that grave site? I mean, you wouldn't.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if you
see Arlington Cemetery being fucked with like that.
Right. And there's, you know, there's random sites all over the South of just fenced off areas where they have grave sites. Right. You might be in the middle of a neighborhood. There's a neighborhood in Virginia Beach called Christopher Farms that right behind it is a small little graveyard. Mm-hmm. Like, it didn't matter how many houses you developed around it. You couldn't touch that property. So you're right. Like, the disrespect for these soldiers. So now they're going through their bringing them up. They have to identify the bodies.
Right.
And there's been some arguments of whether or not they should, and I'm sure they would, is to now bury them in the National Cemetery up here in Jacksonville, which is for U.S. soldiers and vets and all of that.
Correct. And they probably also need their own section because they were Black soldiers, right? And they need to be...
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, no, they need to be honored for that because in the Civil War... It was a huge deal to be a Black soldier.
Yeah. I was just saying, though, I don't know. Because you know in some cemeteries how they divide the regular religions versus the Jewish section? There's like a hole where Nate's parents are buried. The Jews are all buried separately.
I thought Jews had their own cemeteries.
Well, within... So... Yes and no, where within, say, the cemetery off of Main Street, Evergreen, everybody is buried there. However, there is a separate fence for the Jewish section.
Okay.
So I don't know if within the national cemeteries, do they segregate? because I get, I understand what you're saying, because you're right. There was such an importance to African American soldiers during that time. Also interesting to me was, were they Confederates or?
Right. You wouldn't know, because just because they were buried in Florida does not mean they were automatically Confederates. They could have been Yankees.
Union soldiers,
but
right?
But they should be a memorial for them.
100%. Yeah.
So if they're even if they're going to rebury them in Jacksonville, it needs to be made into a memorial graveyard or cemetery.
Right. Right. Yeah, I agree. So it'll be interesting. There's a lot of work and a lot of, you know, where did things go wrong too? Right.
So I got a question. Do you know why there's a lot of, why you have a fence around a graveyard?
No.
You used to believe that spirits couldn't pass through the fence.
Oh.
So you were keeping the spirits in the cemetery. That was the belief.
Well, ghosts are translucent, right?
Well, you know, that was the belief. They didn't know ghosts are translucent at that point, right?
Right, right.
They didn't have HBO.
Right. Well, yeah, that's funny, the things that people believe. And so that's the mystery of the dead bodies and the O-dub. Doesn't surprise me. You know, there's probably a ton of dead bodies everywhere throughout the South. Oh, yes. and further up of, you know, during these Civil War, Revolutionary War
times.
So
Savannah holds the record for the largest amount of Civil War soldiers buried there. When they do construction, it's not uncommon for them to pull up bodies.
Well, it happened in St. Augustine. You know, the restaurant right across from the marina after Hurricane mm-hmm. Matthew, the gift store there on the corner had damage, and the adjuster came out, gave their approval. The construction team came out. They went to pull up the floor, three dead bodies underneath there. They call the police, call the historians. The historians date the bodies back 100-something years, say, close the floors up, they're fine. Left the bodies there.
What?
Yes, the next storm, so Hurricane Matthew, Hurricane Irma, comes and destroys the cobble road right next to it. Again, the road washes up, bodies underneath, just rows of bodies this time. Historians come out, date it. There was a measles hospital right next to there 100-something years ago or whenever, and those were all patients that had died of the measles. And same thing, they said, cover it up. You don't disturb it, you just cover it.
Now, isn't that weird? And I just had this thought of, you know, that could be us under a fucking road somewhere.
Yes.
In the future. I mean, you don't think that. You think you're going to end up in this nice cemetery or whatever, and family's going to come and visit you, but you could just be underneath a fucking restaurant.
Right. Well, that's where it is. So if you go to St. Augustine, and it is right across from that pretty park and the garden there, there's a section of the road that you can tell is newly paved and it doesn't mm-hmm. have gravel or doesn't have the pavers. Underneath mm-hmm. that paved road, rows of dead bodies.
That's so weird.
Yeah. Nuts.
I don't think I'm ever going to go to St. Augustine and feel the same way.
Well, it's true, right? Now that they do those silly ghost tours, and normally the stuff they tell you, I'm like, okay, whatever, Susie. But they're right. There are dead bodies, just like you said, in Savannah, just
everywhere. It's crazy. And that's why Savannah is one of the most haunted cities in the U.S.
Right. Do you believe in that stuff? Do you believe in hauntings?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yes. Gosh.
I was never allowed an Ouija board growing up.
Uh-huh.
You will not bring an Ouija board to my house. I will ask you to leave.
Really?
Yes, I do not. You will not bring an Ouija board in my home. No, no, nope, nope. I completely believe in that stuff. It is real. I've had my personal experiences many times. I won't bring it into my house.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
No. I don't know if I believe in it or not. I'll let you know when I haunt somebody if I believe in it.
when you haunt someone.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to haunt. If it's a real thing, I'm haunting motherfucker. Oh, God, I almost cussed. I'm haunting people.
You're haunting people. So, haunting people. Go ahead.
Yeah, hey, let's jump into what has haunted the state of Florida for the last several months during this appeal process of the Amendment 4.
Right. So
if people aren't aware, Amendment 4 in Florida was... had to do with felony voter rights, correct?
Yes, it did.
So it was disallowing citizens of Florida that were convicted of a felony and still had outstanding fines and penalties from receiving their rights back to vote. So if you were found guilty of a felony, it also restricts your voting rights until you reapply for it, which normally is allowed after you've done your time and paid the fines and penalties, where the Supreme Court of Florida has found that to be unconstitutional.
Agreed.
This past week. So, and it's been kind of a Republican pushing this bill that they believe that they should not have the right to vote, and then into this Democrats, a win for the Democrats, because they feel like they're now going to get tens of millions or tens of thousands of, I think there was like 1.4 felons within the state of Florida.
1.4 million.
Yeah, is what one article showed, that I guess that they are automatically going to become registered Democrats, but I don't believe in that either.
No, neither do I. And so I agree with the amendment to a certain point, because in our country right now, everything's a fucking felony.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's ridiculous what is considered a felony. Driving 25 miles over the speed limit can be considered a felony.
Really?
Yes.
That's insane.
It's insane.
Yeah.
It's absolutely insane that you could have a felony, that you could receive a felony for driving too fast.
Mm-hmm.
So the state and our government has overextended its reach on what a felony is. So back in the day, you used to think of a felony of something serious, like you robbed or you murdered someone, right? It was a serious crime.
Right.
Nowadays, it's bullshit.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. Oh, and what do you think about the fact that... what this amendment is saying, or what the restriction of the amendment is saying, is that if you were found guilty of a felony and you still have outstanding fines and penalties, that you can request your right to vote.
So I'm a little torn, because so if you have committed a crime, and as long as this is a non-violent crime that you committed, I do not believe murderers or rapists should be able to get their rights to vote back. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
You took somebody's life away. You destroyed somebody else's life. You don't get to vote on something that's going to impact somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe. Right. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
So, but for a non-violent crime, if you have served your time and you are trying or making your payments, right, to repay your society for all the fees, because it's expensive, there's fees upon fees upon fees, which is completely bullshit to begin with, then yes, you should have your right to vote.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, you should not be denied your constitutional right because of money.
Right. Well, that's what's, you know, they were arguing, is that it becomes an attack of the less wealthy.
Exactly. Well, because in some cases, it is an attack on the less wealthy because mm-hmm. of the way our system is set up.
Right. So I found this article from theappeal.org that says that most felons, when they're leaving prison, people leaving prison own an average of $13,000 in fines and penalties.
Right.
So, $13,000, that's a lot of money.
It is.
To have to pay back.
Right. And not everybody can afford to pay it back
mm-hmm.
in all one lump sum. They have payment plans.
Right. But then that also means when you read further down into the article that most of those people then are on payment plans, but then just paying interest.
Right.
And if anybody's ever collected up credit card debt and understands interest or even your mortgage, mm-hmm. is that you are essentially just paying years and years of interest and never paying this debt down. So if we're telling these people that you've done your time, you've come out, we've set you up on this payment plan. However, until you've paid off this $13,000, which could take 10 years, 15 years, you have no rights to vote. You can make no decisions on the things that you're now a functioning member of society.
Which is bullshit. You should, like I said, you should be able to vote considering that you have served your time and you're making your payments,
mm-hmm.
right? Now, if you're avoiding your payments, that's another story. But if you're trying to make your payments, then yes, you should have your rights to vote.
Right. And then it makes me think, too, is everybody knows, and well, maybe not everybody, but a felon trying to get a job is not an easy task either. So it's yeah. not like they're getting out of prison and making $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year. They're making minimum wage. They're working in construction and blue collar jobs, which right. then doesn't make it easy to pay off this debt because plus we're not making it
else.
Easy. Yeah, we're not making it easy for them to transition back into society.
No, it's not, especially with the way that it's set up.
Right. And then I know you had talked about when we chatted about this off air is about just how unfair and unrealistic these fines and penalties are, right? That and right. I had brought up the fact, too, where I had mentioned in a couple episodes ago that I was arrested for domestic violence and I was acquitted or not acquitted, adjudication withheld. So it was removed from my record. However, I was told at that time that I had to pay the court fines.
Right.
I had to pay. I was on probation for 6 months. I had to attend an acre management class for 6 months, which I then had to pay $5 a class for on a weekly basis, so $20 a month. I had to pay my probation officer on a weekly basis, $50 a week. I was not working at that time. I had just moved to the state of Florida as a stay-at-home mom. And with a husband who made all the money and controlled the money, what if I couldn't have afforded to pay that?
Right. You end up back in jail.
Right.
Which is, this is the problem we have with our judicial system is that it is intended to, it's intended to entrap the poor.
Right.
And
I do agree.
To keep them there over and over and over again. If you are not financially successful, and I don't mean on a large scale, I mean, if you are not financially stable, you're fucked.
Right.
So people who live in poor cities, who don't have opportunity to jobs, who have poor education because they live in the poor cities and they can't get a hold of any decent education. They go out and they mm-hmm. get picked up for a crime. They're fucked.
Right.
And this is why I also think the Democrats think that they're going to get all these votes because the Democrats seem to think that people who live in poor communities are their demographic.
I agree with that. Yeah. I thought that was interesting where they, when I went on Twitter, it truly was this thing of, you know, the right versus the left, where I haven't met a single Republican yet that was like, no, this is fair. Absolutely.
Right.
No, it's not fair. And it's very presumptuous of us to assume that these felons are then just going to become Democrats, for God's sakes.
Right, exactly. What does that say about the Democratic Party?
Right. Yeah, I agree with that. That they're just assuming, yeah, that the poor, right.
A lot. I feel they're assuming that because the Democratic Party, I feel like, wants people who
mm-hmm.
are going to want to want a government handout. And that's not the, you know, that's, I don't know. That's just crazy.
No, I understand what you're saying. So you're saying that they're assuming that these poor individuals are people that will
vote for their social programs and all of this sort of stuff, instead of thinking that these people are intelligent enough to go, no, wait a minute, I'm going, just because I got out of your program, did this, I'm going to be loyal to you, right? Or I'm indebted to you for this.
Right. I think that they assume, you know, like poor white trash people are looking for a handout rather than just being hardworking Americans that aren't making as much as us, but still working twice, three times as fucking hard, and believe in the old establishments of America and earning a dollar rather than a handout.
Exactly.
And just because you're poor or underprivileged doesn't mean that you're automatically a Democrat.
No, it does not mean you're automatically a Democrat.
Right. Right. Yeah. I was insulted by that too. Like, because I'm a Republican and I don't agree with it. I think it's unfair. And I do think that they are, the law was, I agree with getting felons back their voting rights. I agree
with non-violent felons. And I'm very specific on that because I don't believe a violent crime, you know, should be rewarded with that back. Right.
But does this amendment address that at all?
It should. I think it did. When I looked it up, it was supposed to be nonviolent.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. That's good. Because so this is my thing, right? So this is what I wrote, was my argument against it, and what I can imagine whoever is for this amendment is, well, if you did the crime, then you should have to do the time and everything that goes with it. If you don't want to pay these penalties and these fines, then don't break the law.
Agreed. Except for, you take a situation where you have got, okay, let's talk about a poor city,
mm-hmm.
a single mother who's got young children or teenage children. She's not at home. She's not really raising her kids, not of any fault of her own, but because she's working three jobs to make sure that she can keep the lights on.
Right.
There's gangs in the neighborhood. The kids get caught up in the gang. They get arrested. Right? For doing some stupid shit.
Right.
For standing on the corner with the wrong people.
Right.
Now they're in jail. Now there's all these fees and this fine. So once you've served the time, that's great. But as far as the fees and everything, you shouldn't be revoking somebody's right based off an ability to pay.
Right. Well, so there's a few examples on this appeal.org of a Georgia man that stole a can of beer worth $2 from a corner store. The court ordered him to wear an ankle monitor for a year.
That's bullshit. That, and see, this is the other problem. Ankle monitors are managed by private companies. So someone is making a profit off of that. The money made from that is not going back into the community to help the community.
Right. It's insane. He will eventually be charged more than $1,000 to keep up with his payments. He sold plasma, but he fell behind and the judge jailed him for non-payment. In Texas, a woman received a barking ticket because of the abandoned dog she rescued made too much noise. Police gave her a ticket for failure to properly vaccinate and buy the dog tags. In total, she owed thousands of dollars, missed a payment, and the judge issued a warrant for her arrest. She spent 52 days in jail. 2 days after her release, she received a new barking ticket and has since stopped rescuing dogs.
So what does that teach us? That you go out and you do something good for the community, you're going to get fucked.
Right. 32-year-old did not pay $772 in tickets for careless driving. He was ordered to spend 30 days in jail, but died on his 17th day in... Oh, God, that's a plot twist. I didn't realize that was going to happen. After experiencing seizures and convulsions due to drug withdrawals.
Withdrawals.
Yeah, it's crazy. So to say, like, $300 for maybe a speeding ticket, right? Like that single mom that you were talking about was running late for work and got a speeding ticket. It's now a $300 fine.
Right. She does not have.
Yeah, $300 is a lot of money.
It is. And then what happens is she gets the ticket, she can't pay it, the license gets suspended, and she's got to keep driving. And then over and over and over.
And then she gets arrested.
Right now there's no money. There's nobody at home. Child services now has to come in. Right?
Right.
And the kids now have to go to foster care. Now we're not talking about the damage that's doing to the children.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then
it's
a perpetual cycle. And it has been set up by our corrupt government. And all they're doing is making money and putting it back into their pocket. Because I read in one of the articles that, they have to pay the court fees, the attorney fees. There was one city in that same article you were reading from that the state hired a private attorney's office to prosecute a civilian against a crime for something or another, and when he got all done and said, he got a bill for their attorney for $26,000. I'm going, that's illegal because you can't hire an attorney. You have district attorneys. That's what that job is for.
Right.
You hire private attorneys to represent you when you're being sent to court from the government.
Right. And it really, you had mentioned too about the fact that prisons, so not our county jails, but our prisons are privately owned. And this article does talk about even the city, the fact that they need to, they're using jails and fines and penalties as a way to pay a lack of city funds. And then we have privately owned prisons that are doing things to make a profit off of somebody's punishment.
Right.
Which then makes it a business of putting people into jail.
Abso-fucking-lutely. Abso-fucking-lutely. And, there was a reason a lot of people went to jail or prison under the Clinton era.
Not just Clinton, but in Reagan of the war against drugs. The war against drugs was attack on the poor, which, there is a documentary by Black Lives Matter called, I think, the 14th Amendment or the 8th Amendment. I can't remember what it was called, but it talks about that they feel like that was an attack on minorities as well. I agree with that. Yeah.
Well, it was. Absolutely. Well, the law was there was a harsher sentence for rock cocaine than powdered cocaine. Powdered cocaine was more expensive and harder to get, and normally you found powdered cocaine in executive pockets, not in the dealers in the inner city.
Right.
So they made that a harsher crime. Because they knew that they were uneducated, they didn't have the money, and they wouldn't fight back. Where an executive has the money, would have gotten an attorney, and would have gotten out of it.
Right. Meanwhile, that executive pays their fines and has the rights to vote, but the poorer person that can't then is restricted. And that is what our governor here in Florida was supporting, which is not right. And I don't care that I voted for him. I'm assuming that you might have, I don't know. Are you a Republican or not?
I don't associate with the party.
With either one.
I mean, I'm registered as a Republican, but my choices are based off of a candidate.
Yeah. Well, so my choices are based off of platforms and my own social needs, quite honestly, sometimes, I might be a registered Republican, but I didn't vote for Donald Trump. I voted for DeSantis this time, but not the last governor race. Nate and I voted for the Democrat. So it really, truly depends on who we want. But it is an attack on the poor and underprivileged.
It is.
Which then becomes an attack on minorities as well. And it's unfair. And I was happy that this amendment was found to be unconstitutional.
It is. It is absolutely unconstitutional because there's something in our constitution, I don't know what it is, but you're not allowed to be imprisoned because of debt.
Right.
We abolished debtor's prison. It does mm-hmm. no good. Did you know that we incarcerate more people per capita than Iran, than Russia, than China? We incarcerate right. more people than a fucking communist.
That's crazy.
It is crazy. It's insane.
What do you think about the fact that, so like say in a state of California where marijuana is now legal, mm-hmm. that we have people in prison there for using and possession of marijuana?
Well, you know, that's hard because when they committed the crime, because at that time it was considered a crime based off of the books, even right. though that now it's not. So do they, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I would automatically say they should be let out.
Right.
You know.
There is, in California, I heard on My Favorite Murder today when I was listening to their minisode that in California, in Los Angeles, they are in the process of releasing tens of thousands of previously nonviolent mm-hmm. Pot prisoners, people that were in the possession of it. Now, Nate and I were talking about the difference between being the possession of it and being pot dealers.
Yes, there's,
you know, if you, big difference, right? Mm-hmm. Of compared to maybe, especially in the time of in the 80s, 90s, in this war against drugs, where it was like three strikes and you're receiving a life imprisonment for now using a drug that everybody is doing on TV and it's illegal, and we still have people in prison just for using it.
Right.
And now what do we do with these people? Right. If they've spent 15 years in prison,
they need rehabilitation.
Right.
Because they're not prepared for this new world. They right. don't have the social skills. They don't have the educational skills to be successful. Otherwise, they're going to come back out and they may repeat the offense, especially if they were dealers to begin with.
Right. Right. So I think it's crazy. I think especially because it's a slap in the face where there was a lady on Southern Charm who had her children removed from her because her hoity-toity, she's not rich, but her baby daddy is rich. Okay. And he used his money and his position within the city of Savannah, or Charleston, my bad, to have her children taken away from her because she was a pot user, which, yes, in that state it was illegal and is illegal. Now, 2 years later, all these judgy fucking people that judged her are now in Colorado and they go on a trip and they're all smoking and eating it and doing all of this. And she's looking at them like, you guys took my kids away 2 years ago because of this.
Right.
And now you're using it in my face.
And, you know, that's kind of where they showed their true character, right? They're fucking hypocrites.
For sure. Yeah.
So I'd be like, sure. All of you, fuck you. Get away from me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very upsetting. It's interesting. I'm sorry. I'm Googling to see because I feel bad for not knowing the name of that documentary. I'm pretty sure it's called I'm going to find it before the end of this because it is a very good documentary about the war on drugs. The
right.
And what you were saying, the Clinton administration, the original Bush administration, and how we took the underprivileged and put them in jail. This documentary is more specific to minorities, but it was.
It was. And unfortunately, you know, the war on drugs, right? The whole preventing kids from doing it in all these programs. It was a cover up because in reality, the government was making fucking money fist over fist with these drug dealers.
And
they were making shit tons of money because here's the funny part, right? I just want you to think about this for a second. Most inner cities are the ones that have a drug problem. Most of these people are being picked up, going to jail, having to pay all these fines, right? And all these, and the fines are supposed to be going, paying the certain things, but supposed to also be going back into the city. If that's the case, why are they still the poorest cities? Where's the money? The money is being siphoned out. Because they're sending them to prison where it's a profit. They're not keeping them in county jail where the money can be used back to prevent it. No, 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 because they're sending to prison where they're going to a for-profit organization, and the people, the governors and the mayors and who are all writing these laws, are getting their cut on the back end.
Right. And it talks about, so the documentary is called 13th, which, shame on me, so 13th is named after the 13th Amendment, which then abolished slavery. And it talks about the fact that the war on drugs and the for-profit prison systems in these low economy, and it does, not this documentary, but actually the, what's that fucking comedian's name that I talked about, the blonde hair girl, she talked about it in her documentary as well, not just the war on minorities and African Americans, but it truly is a minority on the white trash of America, right? The poor poverty.
It's war on the poor, uneducated Americans.
Right.
And so, really what it is.
And that these prisons, these prisoners are making our clothes for Walmart. There are major corporations that employ these prisoners to make our goods and don't have to pay them shit.
Pretty much. It's worse than minimum wage.
Right, which then takes minimum wage away from a law-abiding citizen, which maybe then is causing them to commit crimes like stealing a can of beer because you have free prisoners, which, hey, by the way, sounds a lot like slavery to me.
Correct. And here's the other thing. So I don't know if you know this or not, but I found out the Bureau of Prison said that in 2017, it cost them $36,000 to detain each prisoner.
Mm-hmm. How much?
So $36,000 a year for each prisoner.
Right.
Which is crazy because in the real world, you can't afford an apartment, the car, the gas, the food. I mean, on $36,000 a year.
No.
Mm-mm. You sure can't. So how are they getting it? You know, that number doesn't seem right.
Right. And I've been to county jail. The food that they're serving you, I was only there for one night, so let me not act like I struggled at all. But the food was fucking terrible.
Oh, of course. It's fucking slop.
It was worse than that. It was the worst hamburger helper I've ever had in my life. And I like shitty food. No, and it was not,
sweetie,
good.
I meant like pig slop.
Yeah, basically, you're right. But it's, you know, like, I don't know. The prison system, and you know what? That's why I kind of like what Trump has been doing, which is part of our next discussion, is Trump is working on prison reform and releasing people that have been in prison too long.
With no fines attached to it.
Right. Which is opposite of what he ran his platform on. He ran his platform on a tougher prison reform. And then once getting in there and talking to people like Kim Kardashian and other legal minds that have talked him into the fact, or just showed him, like, this is unfair.
Right. And he was like, yep. And he completely backed off of that. And he's doing the right thing. And what's it called? The First Act?
The First Step Act.
The First Step Act. So... And it's really good. And in that, he also is stating that it's not just about the prison reform. It's also making sure that when they leave the prison, they're prepared for real life. They are prepared with skills so they can go and get a job, which is... And he's creating an economy where he can go and get the jobs.
Right, right. Like the guy that he released that I watched, and I think I shared on my Twitter and tagged you in, or tagged our Not a Safe Space in, he was arrested for a white-collar crime that white businessmen, corporate men have done a million times. It was for not paying fines and fees for a business that went bad. Him and the six other African-American businessmen were sentenced to 15 years in prison. He has spent 8 years in prison for a bad business deal. Not stealing money from somebody, nothing like that, where a white counterpart of theirs would have gotten away with it, would have paid some fees and some retribution and moved on.
Right.
And now this guy was saying, and this guy requested a pardon for Barack Obama and was denied it. And so he came out and said, Barack wouldn't help us. President Trump did. And I still got three. There's still three of them left. And now they're working to get these guys out.
Right. That's crazy.
It's just, it is craziness. So let's jump from this into some politics talk.
Well,
so
there's one thing I do want to mention. So, you know, okay. Trump's first, what is it called?
Step Act.
First Step Act is working really well. Do you know about his opportunity zones?
No.
Okay, so opportunity zones are part of the Tax Cut and Jobs Act of 2017. So what it is the government determines what an opportunity zone is, basically a low-income area, right? Mm-hmm. And what this does is you can invest in an opportunity zone. So you can put money into this. It's a long-term investment. So business can come in, they get tax cuts, and investors can come in. So for example, if someone like you or me wanted to do it, if we were to, say, sell a house that we had and you make a profit mm-hmm. off of the house, right? Well, you know you get taxed on that profit.
On the profit, right.
So instead of getting taxed, you put it into an opportunity zone account, okay? Mm-hmm. That account, the money goes in to help build the opportunity, provides better schooling, jobs, infrastructure, right? So these people can start to succeed. Mm-hmm. So and as that grows, if you keep your money in the account for 10 years, when you go to pull it out, including your interest and the money you made on it, you don't pay any taxes. So okay. It's a win-win. So investors can put money into these communities. They'll make their money back because they're still investors, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the people who need the opportunity don't have to pay it back. They're growing their economy. They're going to start being able to pay taxes and grow, and the city will be able to pay that money back.
You know what I like about that is, you know, the one of the big difference between Democrats and Republicans is that they say, you know, Republicans don't like to give back. They don't want to share or divide their wealth, right? They don't feel like they need to help the underprivileged. And then they say, you know, that the underprivileged is always, they're always looking, or let's just say the Democrats, because that's the way that's divided, right?
Right.
Is that they're always trying to feed these people, that why should we be helping them if they're not working? Where this program then allows the wealthy to invest their money as business people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still helping. So it is a resolution rather than us just fighting about why are we giving free shit and why should I have to pay more taxes? It's made it a business opportunity
right. That
is helping both
yep. Rather
than just fighting over the same
thing.
It's all the time.
Helping to shift capital across America. And
right. It's
a beautiful thing. It's kind of back to that phrase. If you give a man a fish, you feed him for one day. You teach him how to fish, he can feed himself for the rest of his life. And that's
Absolutely. What
we need to do with our poor and uneducated, is we need to educate them. We need to teach them how to fish. We need to make them understand.
We need to give them business opportunities, right?
Yes.
Like, I know the city of Jacksonville has done that with Shad Khan, the owner of the Jaguars, was involved in this community program where it's helping underprivileged business owners with grants to start their own businesses.
Right. And then also to help people come in and help them run it, because they may not understand what you need to know about businesses.
Right.
You know, a lot of underprivileged people do not understand the importance of a credit score.
Right. Well, that's my stepmother had told me that Pharrell Williams, the rapper and mogul who is a Virginia Beach local, has had conferences in Virginia Beach to teach minorities of, hey, let me teach you how to build generational wealth.
Exactly.
Because they hadn't learned in the past. And, you know, if you didn't come from money, it's hard to learn how to make money and retain money.
Yes.
Rather than just using it every day, which is the way that Americans typically live, is if we didn't come from money, we're just getting by.
Right. Unless you made an actual decision to really learn. So
right.
One thing I grew up.
And not just a decision, but had the opportunity to really learn, right?
Right. So I grew up in a very poor neighborhood. Okay. Mm-hmm. I was the only white kid. I was one of three white kids in my entire neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Okay. My mother said one very important thing to me over and over and over and over again. And she said, education is the one thing they cannot take away from you. Mm-hmm. So my mother, who didn't finish school, literally taught me this. Basically had said, so she pushed education very much. She said, you're going to college. This is how it's going to be. And that made the difference. Mm-hmm. Because figuring out, making sure I was in advanced classes, making sure I was doing what I needed to do, even though she didn't understand it herself, she knew this is where I was supposed to go. And that's why I was able to go to college.
Right.
Because, I mean, I fought to get into the harder classes. I was like, this is how I get out and not into the gang. Right. Because we had gang members walking down our street. Now, the funny
part... I can't imagine you in a gang.
No. Well, you want to know the funny part, though?
Can you imagine? I'm going to... I wish I was better at Photoshop. I'd make you into a gangbanger.
Yeah, probably not. Right. But you know what the funny part, though? So we had gang in our neighborhood, but anytime one of those gang members walked by my house and my mom was on the porch smoking a cigarette... Would the guy go, straighten up, pull your pants up, and you speak. Hi, Miss Dee Dee. She's like, how are you? Yep. The gang members were polite and nice.
Yeah, well, because a lot of it is just opportunity and family, right? Like, those gang members are sometimes there because it's the only family they have. It's the only form of safety they have. It's the only form of consistency they have.
Right.
It's the only form of work they might receive. Where then it becomes a choice of no other choice.
Right. And I mean, they all respected my mother, this tiny, you've met Dee, she's super tiny woman. Yeah. And I have seen grown men the size of my husband acting all tough and they see her and they straighten their act right up.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very interesting.
Yeah, it is. Well, because I think that a lot of times because of TV, you assume that gang members are these, you know, hood rat thugs, this or that, where it really does become a place of opportunity. And it's what they know. And it's the only choice that they have sometimes.
Right.
Where, you know, if not, then they're, you know, you need family of some sort that you might not be able to get in any other way. You might need protection of some sort that you might not be able to get in any other way. And then it's hard to get out of it.
Right. It is.
Without going to prison.
Exactly. And most of the time
and now you having end to pay these fucking fines.
Or end up dead.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So the Democratic primaries are in full swing. There's all these caucuses everywhere. I don't pay much attention to it until they've come to a final decision. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're not a registered Democrat, you can't vote in the primaries anyways. So it's up to the Democrats to bring their best candidate to the table to go against Trump. I mean, it truly is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Once again, it's my opinion, and Nate said it to me the other day, that we feel like they failed.
Yeah.
I mean, all the options seem bad, but I felt like the Republicans failed last time, too. I don't think anybody's truly ignited the nation and with somebody out of the blue since Barack Obama, which I didn't vote for, but God, was he a game changer and not in a negative way. There was this just kind of positive feeling about him.
Okay.
Where I just feel like we keep seeing these same old fuckers over and over again. Barack Obama was the first, like, oh, that's different.
Yeah.
That's different. You know, that's not a rich billionaire. That's not a rich white man. That's not a same old boring lying female or whatever it might be. Like, he was the last one where it was like, okay, they're being creative.
Right. They put their best foot forward on that one.
Right. So and this time it's like, it's the same old shit.
Oh, for the Democrats, it's just, yeah. I mean, you know, something that is just,
So this is my question to you. I have, first of all, do you think that candidates can be too old or too young? So Sanders is 79, Bloomberg is 78, Donald Trump is 74, Elizabeth Warren is 70, Warren is 71, Mayor Pete is only 38.
Ooh.
So the question on both sides is, are the people too old, too far out of touch? Is Mayor Pete too inexperienced? Or does the age allow the experience that might be needed to run the country?
Right. The 38-year-old's way too young.
For sure.
Yeah, way too fucking young. I'm sorry. You can't handle the pressure that's about to be put on you at 38.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. I don't necessarily like them being all in their 70s, but I understand what you're saying as far as the age also gives you the experience, but that's if you have the real experience. Bernie Sanders has been saying the same fucking message since the 70s.
Right. And something that Charlemagne the God said on The Brilliant Idiots is that Sanders was raised during segregation. You can't tell me that these old white men don't have that, where maybe they're a little different now, including Donald Trump, but you can't help but worry that some of that way of that they were raised during segregation and strong racism still isn't with them. Now, people can change and evolve, but that's just what Charlemagne was saying. Like, okay, well, is he a little too old to be holding on to a time where we've all evolved way beyond that?
And I think that's based on a person. I really think, because where I think someone like Bernie Sanders is not capable of running the country, Donald Trump, who isn't necessarily too much younger than him, is running the country. So I think it really is based on the person as far as the age goes. And that also has a lot to do with health as well, right?
Right, because Bernie Sanders has had a stroke or something recently, right?
Right, and Joe Biden's over there stuttering like a goat.
I didn't even put fucking Biden on here. I don't even know why Biden is still trying.
You do know why, right?
For what?
It's so they can claim Trump is investigating an opponent because they're investigating his son who is on a board and blah, blah, blah. It's a political game.
Yeah, I don't dive that deep into it. Yeah. This is I just think he's a joke. Like, sit down.
He is.
All right.
Now,
what I did like was during, I think, the Nevada caucus, Elizabeth Warren came on stage with a contract in her hand and told Mayor Mike Bloomberg that she had drafted a contract that would release all of his former employees, male and female, from their NDAs. So, because Mayor Bloomberg has been accused of, and his companies, been accused of bending the law, some offset comments in regards to females and race and this and that. And they've all signed NDAs, so it can't be discussed. So Elizabeth Warren walked up and said, "Here, if you have nothing to sign, go ahead, I'll sign it." And she goes, "I'll text it to you." And that's the only thing I was like, that was kind of funny. Like, that's, go ahead. Right. That's funny. He's definitely not signing that shit.
No, of course he's not signing that shit. But he came back and said, anybody who wants out can contact me and I'll let them out.
Yeah, he said three. What I read was that there were three employees that he identified that he was saying that he was willing to release from their NDAs. I just thought that was fun. I was like, oh, look at Elizabeth Warren. She'd be a little gangster there. Way to bring some humor to it. I do think, too, that what they said was that, you know, that this is, and this was Charlemagne the God's statement, was that it is dream selling season, right? Every single one of these candidates are saying anything they can to be the primary, right? To be the front runner.
I hate politicians.
I know. It's all bullshit.
It is bullshit. Because every one of these motherfuckers, I don't care who their name is, okay, every one of them has said the exact same thing fucking over and over and over and over again. And even if they get elected, they don't fucking do anything. They don't improve anything they say they're going to do. And they get reelected because they promise the same bullshit and it's over and over. When are the American people going to fucking wake up?
Right.
I'm so tired of being fed lines after lines after lines of bullshit. Right? I'm sorry. The most person I have seen anybody doing anything is fucking Donald Trump. And he's doing it more for the Democrat demographics than the Democrats are fucking doing for them. I'm so tired of hearing, you know, I hate the running the mouth of false promises. And I hate the fucking, the shit slinging. Mm-hmm. I can't stand it.
Right. And I think that comes on both sides too, right?
Yes. Where,
because what happens, I think, is that these candidates, including Donald Trump, they were never president. They don't know what the inside, besides Biden, which he should know better, right? Because he's been a VP, so he understands the inside workings of becoming a president. But you make all these statements of, when I become president, I'm going to do this, 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 and this, and this. And so you get all these millions of people to back you, and then you become president. And the administration goes, oh, yeah, it doesn't really work like that.
Yeah, sorry.
You know, you can't really do all of that. And by the way, there's still this voting basis called the House and the Senate. And those fuckers all hate you. And so they're going to decline it anyways.
Right. So which is.
And then you're like, ooh. And then the president gets blamed for it, whoever it might be. Barack, Bush, Trump. Well, what happened to this so-and-so? We all knew it was bullshit anyways. You can't just make that's like me saying, you know, pizza on Fridays, you know, when people would run for class president.
Right.
Yeah. Pizza every day. Well, really, you don't control that. The county does. And you're just a kid.
Right. But and this is the problem that I have with it all is we put so much hype and attention on the president election. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
When you really think about it and boil it down, the president is a fucking scapegoat for what goes wrong in the House and the Senate. But those elections, we don't fucking pay attention to. We don't pay attention to the important people that are running our government. Do you know when your House elective government, when you're supposed to vote for those fuckers?
No idea.
Do you even know who the candidates are?
I don't even know who's personally sitting in those chairs right now.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. That is the point. And that is the most important person, more important than the president.
Right.
And
I agree
we
with
don't
that.
Have a clue. And they did this on purpose. They did this on purpose so they could keep getting themselves reelected, not have to do any work, and blame somebody else. I mean, that's a fucking perfect job.
Now, I did see today that Nancy Pelosi, who has been in this job for over 20 years, has in the state of California, not only the current elect and then the opposite can run, but so she is a Democrat in her up and coming election. She has a brand new Democrat running against her, as well as a brand new Republican. So guess what, you petty little witch? You better bring your best game. And for everybody you pissed off, you better bring your best game.
She needs to just fucking disappear. Okay? That state.
Oh, she's got a lot of ego. She's fighting. She's going to fight it out.
That state is in such a terrible array. It's fucking horrible. How dare you come on public television and tell us how you're going to run this country and you can't handle your own fucking state when you have people shitting on the sidewalk?
I agree.
And they would rather be shitting on the sidewalk than working to have a home. That's there's a problem there.
Right. So I think the primaries are over in June. I tried to look it up. I think in June.
Okay.
So we'll have a final front runner in June. And then it will be the presidential race between whoever they pick between them and Donald Trump, which then I will pay more attention to, dive into whoever the Democrats have lifted up as their best. This is the best of the best, people.
So this is sad, and it really is. And let me tell you what, there needs to be a new amendment or something, because if you can't show up to a fucking debate, you should be disqualified.
Oh, I agree. Yeah.
Bloomberg didn't show up for how many debates?
Right.
I'm like, who the fuck do you think you are? You're going to run the country but not show up to a debate? Oh, sorry, you know, China's on the phone. Hey, but I can't really make that call. I'll call you back. No, that's not how this shit works.
Right. Right. Do you think, what was I going to say? Oh, do you think the Democrats have a chance of beating Donald Trump?
Nope.
No, I don't think they do either. I just think that and I don't understand how we can. I felt the same way during Barack's second re-election. Is I felt like, because at that time the Republicans threw back up Romney, and I was like, really? This is the best we could fucking do again?
Right.
Again, like, I didn't vote for Barack, but I do felt like he was a game changer. He was unique and different and somebody we had never seen before.
Right.
Which really re-energized people. Unfortunately, kind of the same thing with Donald Trump. He was unique and different, and he fired people up in some strange way.
Right. Now remember, Trump's entire platform was about draining the swamp because people are tired of politicians. We're tired of politicians going in poor, coming out millionaires. Where's that money coming from? Okay. He's tired of them taking advantage of the American people. So, and I liked that Donald Trump was not a politician. And I told Dion, we were watching the primaries way back when, right? When he was just this tiny little dot and everybody was making fun of him. I looked at Dion and I went, he's going to win. He's like, no, he's not. He's a fucking Donald Trump. Nobody's going to take him seriously. I'm like, no, you don't fucking understand. That man right there is going to win the presidency. And he's like, he didn't believe me. Right?
Right.
And he's like, why? And I said, well, he's different. He knows how to run businesses. He doesn't, you know, he knows how to run a business. The government is a business. These politicians don't know how to run businesses.
And he's just so fucking immature, though. I wish they would shut off Twitter. That's what we need an amendment for, is shut off Twitter, you fucking idiot.
You know, and that, you know what? My mom, Carolyn, and Dion had this argument about Donald Trump. Because she's like, I can't stand him. I don't like him. And blah, 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 blah. And goes, you know, he's insensitive and all of this other stuff. And Dion goes, I don't really care. I don't need my president to be sensitive. I need my therapist to be sensitive, not my president. I need my president to make hard decisions that I'm not capable of making for the best interest of my country.
Right.
And that's what it is.
Right. I guess my argument to that is I need my president to be held to a very high stature. You know, you look to your leaders to be the most mature and rational, and sometimes his tweets seem unrational or irrational. So then it makes you question his mental stability, which is why people are like, oh, he's just going to blow shit up. He's going to do this. Well, he doesn't have the ability to just blow shit up. But his tweets and his actions make you feel like, oh, God, he's a pot ready to boil over.
Right. But unfortunately, what nobody's realizing is those tweets are part of the game plan. He is seven steps ahead of everybody, and nobody can see it because they're too worried about the feelings of that tweet. And it's true, he does that.
If he was seven steps ahead, I would have assumed that he would have known where Kansas City was located.
Yeah, well, you know. You got not everybody can be perfect.
Right. So I would ask that if any of our listeners are Democrats, obviously I'm not, just personally speaking, if you would like to come on the show and explain the current candidates and talk about it, then we will give you that platform without arguing against it, just for the mere fact of educating the few that might not have the ability to dive into the all the articles, I would welcome that. I'm open to learning about mm-hmm. these people, even if I don't have the right to vote for them at this point, because it will help us make a decision come November of next year or this year of how we're going to vote. And if you want to wait until after the primaries and come on and teach us about your candidate select, then I would welcome that too, without it being an argument of conversation mm-hmm. of a place from teaching Tabby and I something, because we're both open to that.
Absolutely.
So I listened to the Brilliant Idiots new episode this weekend, and they said that they had gone to Mexico, and this Mexican man, Raul, said that he had a resolution to our immigration issues in the U.S.
Okay.
And he was like, okay, Raul, what is that? And he goes, stop saying it's so great. You guys are on TV all the time talking about how this is the best place in the world and that you are the land of opportunity. Of course we want to come. Of course we want to come check it out.
Right?
Stop bragging about it. And I was like,
well, that's, oh yeah, yeah. Right? I mean, right? That's kind
of, we talk about all the time. We are the best. Of course you want to come check out the best.
Right. And yeah, that does make part of the problem, doesn't it? Our ego's gotten too big.
Right. He was, you know, I know, I thought about it. People talk so poorly about Mexico that, you know, Mexico City is dangerous, that you can't even drink the fucking water. You don't see us rushing to move there.
Nope. Well, you don't see us rushing to move anywhere, do you?
Right. So, you know, maybe if we stop bragging so much.
Right.
People wouldn't want to come over here all the time.
It's very true.
Sounds pretty simple.
Yeah.
Why don't we post more pictures of the shit in the streets in California instead of our Hollywood mansions?
That are right next to the people shitting in the streets, mind you.
Right, but we're cropping that out so we look good.
No, we don't.
Let's show the bad side.
Let's show some fucking reality here.
Right, absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, in comparison, yes, we are a land of opportunity in comparison to other countries, but it's still fucking hard. We're not saying it's easy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or we're the best.
Right. I think compared to a lot of the other countries out there, we probably are utopia. The countries that I've been to. But like they said, for example, Sweden's kind of a great place, right? All the prisoners. One of the guys on Brilliant Idiots that had to serve some jail time in Sweden. And he said that he had a private bathroom. Each one of the prisoners there had a private bathroom.
Why did he have to serve jail time in Sweden?
He was there visiting and got into a bar fight and got arrested. And it became the issue of trying to get him out and reaching the embassy and all this stuff. But Alex had to serve time in a Swedish prison. And he was like, it's not so bad.
Right? It's like, but, yeah, okay.
Yeah, so but you don't hear Sweden bragging about how great things are over there because they don't want fucking people coming.
No, because they don't have enough room.
Right, yeah. So anything else on our political talk you want to add on?
Nope, I think I'm good on politics.
Good. So I want to mention this article that you had brought over, you had sent to me. It said, self-centered, stubborn, argumentative men are more likely to drive luxury cars.
Yes, I thought it was pretty freaking hilarious.
It reminded me of the joke that Nate always says with, what's the difference between a Porky Pine and a BMW?
And what is it?
Porky Pines have the pricks on the outside.
Wow, that's really fucked up considering I used to own a BMW.
I forgot about that. My bad.
Yeah.
So, So the article said that, well, here, tell me about the article a little bit.
So basically the article was saying that people who have high-end luxury cars, Audis, BMWs, Jaguars, etc., are pricks, basically, is mm-hmm. what this study is saying. But then they also said at the same time that these same people who can afford it feel like they want to display their wealth.
Right.
Which makes sense, right? Psychologically, if you have worked hard and you have acquired things, it is your natural instinct to display your wealth. It's like a dog bringing over a fucking big stick. Maverick right. does it all the time. And then, but at the same time, they also said people who are very, that they pay attention to other people and a lot of details, that sort of thing, that they were also more likely to have it. But the really big key factor is their average age owner was 53 years old. So it's somebody who's worked most of their life, saved up their money, and bought a fancy car.
So I agree with that. So they feel like they have, because so I said that I wanted to, at a certain point, buy an Audi after I had reached a certain part in my career. And in the next couple years, it's time for me to buy a new car. But now that I have driven different cars, I'm like, oh, I kind of like my Mazda. There's also a part of me that feels like an Audi's a little pretentious. Like, okay, well, do I really need to do that? Because then I look like an asshole.
Do you? Or do you feel like people are looking at you like you're an asshole?
Yeah, that's the way I would feel. And so then I'm like, I don't know.
But then why are you making a decision based off of someone else's opinion of you, though?
No, so I agree. Yeah. I agree. And so where really my decision has come to, I like the controls of the Mazda, that, you know, how we could turn our radios down at this little hand control, that right. if an Audi doesn't have that in 2 or 3 years, I'm just not going to buy it. I'd rather buy a brand new Mazda because I like the function of it. But I was of the mindset of, okay, well, when I reach a certain point in my career, I'd like to reward myself for that.
Right. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Right. And I do agree, though, that self-centered, stubborn, argumentative, entitled people enjoy luxury things. And so sometimes it's a brag ability, right? Of look at my car, look at this, look at that. And I did like that the article said that a lot of them are bad drivers because they feel entitled to drive the way that they do.
Right, because they feel like a speeding ticket is not a big deal. They just pay it off because they have the financial ability to do so.
Right.
Right. But at the same time, if you have worked and saved your money and you have now own a BMW, that doesn't automatically make you an arrogant prick.
Right.
So I almost feel like this article is trying to basically put down successful people because maybe this journalist isn't successful themselves.
Right. Well, I think that the article was actually kind of poorly written because it had such a bold title, but then went in and almost
didn't have any facts to back it up.
Yeah, there were really. Zero facts. It talked about a study, but actually didn't provide details of the study. And where we can all joke, you know, like Nate's joke of a prick being on the outside versus the inside, of that's whether or not that's true. That's an opinion that maybe if you work so hard, you are given the opportunity and the ability to buy this car as a reward for yourself, that we should just leave it at that.
Right. And not stop trying to judge someone based off of what they're driving.
Right.
So I thoroughly enjoyed when we had our BMW and we had it for a very long time. When you go to a BMW dealership and you get your car serviced, there's quite a service difference between that and when I go to the Mazda dealer.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely different. The chairs are better. The service is better. When I had my BMW and I dropped it off, they gave me a car right then and there, so I could go on and about and do my business. Mazda won't give me a car without me having to create a huge fucking fuss. There's a definite service level difference between the two.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, my thing, what kind of service issue? Are you talking about regular maintenance of your Mazda or?
So if I took my Mazda in to go get an oil change, which I have to go do next week, I have to go in, I have to take in all my work stuff with me, and I have to sit there for an hour, hour and a half while they do my work, because they won't give me a replacement car.
Right, like the Porsche, Mercedes, BMW dealership. Yes. So, right, yeah.
I go, hey, I'm bringing in my car at this date, da-da-da. I said, I am going to need another vehicle. They're like, not a problem. I will get that for you. If they didn't have a vehicle, they would rent a car from Enterprise for me so I'd have a vehicle.
Mm-hmm. So, I think,
That's what I mean, the service level of the difference.
Yeah, I think that if Nate was here, his joke would be, and it truly a stated fact in regards to we've owned Mazdas now for 6 years, is that service issues we've never actually had with our Mazdas. Where my best friend owned a Jaguar at one time and within a year started having service issues on their cars. I'm talking about, you know, not just oil changes, but shit going wrong. Where now she has a window that wouldn't work, and the cost to fix that window, where yes, and today I can afford the car payment of an Audi. Most of us can afford a car payment of anything, right? What I can't afford was the $1,500 window fee that it costs to fix that Jaguar compared to the $300 window fee of a Mazda, Honda, whatever it might be.
So oh, absolutely.
She had this Jaguar that when we went through a drive-through, she'd have to open the door because she couldn't afford to fix the window, right? So,
and of course, I'm assuming it was out of warranty, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Right. So yeah. Let's be really clear. And that I completely agree with. Now, let me tell you how we did our BMW, though. So I didn't go out and buy a brand new BMW.
Mm-hmm.
I went to this place, Orlando Auto something or another. I can't remember the name of it. Basically, they're used cars. Mm-hmm. You get them cheaper than a used car lot, right? Or going to a dealership. And the reason why is the way they run their business, right? So I went in and I got the BMW. I paid cheaper than anywhere else. I think I paid $25 for that BMW off the lot. And it was only a few years old. Been completely certified, da-da-da. So I turned around and spent an extra $5 on the extended warranty.
Okay.
So probably 3 months before I went to go change it in, a light came on, turned it in. They, because of the sensor or whatever, they had to replace the entire engine.
Oh, wow.
They couldn't fix it. They had to replace the entire engine. I got a brand new fucking engine for $50.
Right.
You tell me what service allows you to get a brand new engine for $50.
Right.
I mean, that was pretty insane.
Yeah, that, you know, those extended warranties. We just had a friend that bought a used car from one of those, like, CarMax places.
Mm-hmm.
And she had an extended warranty on it. A single mom in the middle of Christmas. Engine blew up right after Thanksgiving. Brought it to the Honda dealership or Nissan dealership, wherever the fuck the kind of car it was.
Right.
And they told her, you know, that it was going to be thousands and thousands of dollars to fix this thing. Well, then she took it back to CarMax and said, hey, by the way, you bought an extended warranty on it. It's $100.
Right. Those extended warranties save your life. And
save your life.
They do. They fucking save your life.
Yeah, it's fucking expensive to maintain cars.
And you have to be very careful with extended warranties.
Mm-hmm.
You have to make sure you're not buying the extended warranty where you pay up front and submit a receipt to get the money back.
Mm-hmm.
Those are bullshit. Don't do those. Make sure it's a real extended warranty that a dealership has to accept and takes it. Because
mm-hmm.
we've been caught when we first bought the BMW. That was what they offered us. I was like, no. So then we contacted BMW directly and they transferred it over for us, which was a lifesaver.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Especially to put a new engine in a car.
For $50.
Yeah. When my ex-husband and I bought it, like a Chevy S10 20 years ago, right? 19 years ago. We didn't have any money. He was an E1. I think I was making $18,000 a year at Geico. Within right after the 30-day used car warranty, the fucking engine blew up and we needed a new engine for it. So this car that we had financed, we then had to, it was like $3,000 or $4,000. We were 21 years old. We didn't have we didn't have a savings account, for God's sake.
No.
At all. I mean, so we then had to refinance the car and finance $3,000 to $4,000. If we didn't have the ability to have You know, I've been with my bank for over 20 years, which is a great credit union. If we didn't have that access to that bank, I can't imagine where we would have gotten the money from. We would have had to call mom or dad or God knows. I mean, that's how people end up without cars and transportations and not being able to get to their work
and losing their job. And
yeah, it's
then
crazy.
Ending up doing an illegal activity and ending up in jail. So this is why your credit score is so fucking important.
So crazy. I mean, that's something that we talk to our son about all the time. It's like, our parents didn't talk to us about our credit score and how important it is. Mm-hmm. That it is so important to maintain that.
Right, it is. It's very, very important.
Right. And then to make, you know, just good decisions. Don't go get a bunch of fucking credit cards. Don't do any of that. Don't blah, 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 blah.
No, you need one credit card, small limit, carry a balance, a small balance, less than 34%, and then that's it.
34% on what?
You carry a balance from month to month.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the interest rate. I was like, are you fucking crazy?
No, hell no. I said carry a balance of 34% of the entire credit line. No. Fuck no.
I was like, are you fucking nuts?
No, I'm not nuts. I worked in a bank,
right,
taking care of credit cards. I know how this shit works.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, credit cards can be the death of people. So,
which, yes.
So, okay, yeah. So that was the article on luxury cars. Again, I think the article was very loosely written. It wasn't factual, but I do think there are a ton of people that are self-centered, stubborn, argumentative, I would probably, like, douchey.
Right.
Especially if I just imagine what South Florida looks like to me sometimes, where I can be like, oh, I can see that.
Right, because everyone down there has a fucking Beamer.
Right. And then there's...
Know, or a Mercedes, or a Maserati.
Yeah, keep going up, girl. They don't have Beamers. Right. They don't have Mercedes. It's higher and higher and higher. And
higher.
Lambos and this and that. And they all drive like dickheads. And they're all flying down the highway because, you know, they want to show off this great car. But then there's also people who have just worked their entire life with a goal car in mind. And once they've reached that success, that's when they buy it. And they should.
Right. So stop fucking judging people by their cars.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
absolutely.
You can still be a prick in a Mazda, Nate.
Yeah, right. Well, Nate drives a Volkswagen, but what else?
Well, so you're the prick in the Mazda.
I am.
Now.
Yeah. I'm the bitch in the Mazda. So, all right. Anything else?
No, I think we're good.
Okay, good. Well, that was a great conversation. Again, if we have anybody who would like to come and educate us on the Democratic primaries and the candidates that are running or join us after the selection has been made, we welcome it and welcome learning about it. That takes a lot of yep. work off of my plate and your plate to actually have to educate ourselves. So,
right.
So please... reach out to Tabby or I and share with us what you know and why you feel so passionate about the candidate that your party has selected.
Sounds good. I like it.
All right. You want to say your goodbyes?
Sure. So everyone, as usual, if you have any questions, comments, rants, or concerns, give us a shout out at notasafespacepodcast@gmail.com. As always, we're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Have a great day, guys.
Bye.
Bye.